You're listening to episode 57 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng.
Am I doing this right?
Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Gotham Writers for sponsoring today's episode. They teach creative writing classes in New York City and online and have built an incredible writing community. Be sure to hang around at the end of the show to find out why Gotham has earned an amazing reputation within the writer's world. We have Tara Thompson Rasmus on the show with us. She's a freelance writer, editor, and consultant who started her writing career with Refinery29 and became the senior beauty editor for Lucky Magazine. She now writes and consults for publications and brands including Self Magazine, Barney's The Window, Condé Nast 23 Stories, Neutrogena, and Fresh. I'm so grateful to Tara for really peeling back the layers of what it's like to wear many different hats and what it's like to transition between each new job opportunity. She really bears it all and details the highs and lows of being a writer, the realities of working for major brands, and the choices that are presented to working moms here in America. One of my favorite parts of today's episode is our brutally honest discussion about burnouts and how to prevent it and overcome it. We also unpack the fears and worries that naturally comes with leaving a job and taking on new challenges that push you to grow. For any of you freelance writers listening in, you'll want to pay special attention to the part where Tara walks us through step by step on how she created her own job position at one of her favorite lifestyle blogs, and how you can too by finding ways to be unique to a brand and pitching your work. This is a very special episode because it's one of the rare ones where we really get personal about how your work impacts your emotional and psychological health and what we need to do to take care of ourselves. Now let's jump right in. Hey guys, I'm so excited to have an old friend here. Well, she's not old, she's quite young and lovely and gorgeous. Tara, how are you doing?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
So we first met on this commercial for Verizon. We were both actors. Your acting career was like, you were playing young Uma Thurman by then in My Super Ex-Girlfriend, right? The movie.
You know what's funny is that actually my acting career went backwards in terms of success. What so mean? My biggest success was my first job when I was 16 and I was a regular on a TV show.
Yes, The Mountain.
Yeah, that was The Mountain. And then I had a couple movie roles, including, I played young Uma Thurman in My Super Ex-Girlfriend, which was hilarious. And then in college, I basically booked a commercial each summer, which was amazing for money. And that was one of them was the Verizon commercial we were on. But yeah, it really went like backwards. And, it was very clear, when to walk away, because I was like, well, kind of had that high point. And then I had lots of other different opportunities and it was a perfect transition out.
I remember I was like, oh my God, this girl is so gorgeous. She's booked all these things. I had such a friend crush on you. I was like, oh my gosh, this girl kicks ass. She makes time to balance in school, education.
Thank you. Well, what's funny is that you're giving me way too much credit. My parents made me go to college is how it went down.
Hey, at least you went, right?
No, absolutely. Well, what they said was, and I thought it was very fair. I remember feeling that it was very fair at the time. They said, if you are booked on a job, you can defer. And if you're not booked on a job, you're going to go. And then you can just go for broke over the summers and audition your little heart out. I actually appreciated that because what's funny is that I was never the girl who was like, oh, acting is my career. I am Miss Hollywood. That's my dream. It really wasn't my dream. I fell into it and I was really, really grateful to have success. And I really, really loved it. And I did think I was good at it. And I had some great training over the years. And it was something that I really enjoyed. But it was not necessarily something that I was like, oh, this is it for me. So I think that almost I was a little relieved. My parents were like, oh, you have to go to college because I think I was a little bit nervous about having all my eggs in one basket because I had discovered very quickly, I had my high point with that first job. And then I saw how you are not at all guaranteed to get another job ever. I don't know if it's like this for every demographic, but I think when you're a young actress, like a little hottie kind of actress, you're in your 20s or teens, you actually can be hurt when you are coming right off of a TV show or some kind of big project because you're not a fresh face anymore. They're like, oh, we just saw her. We don't even want to see her again. But it's like, it can help or hurt you. Either like if you did well enough, then they're like, okay, yeah, we want to invest in this person. We think that she could carry another project. So I learned that the industry could be very, very harsh. So I was definitely not wanting to put all my eggs in that basket.
And it takes a lot to know when to cut that cord and be like, okay, it's time to move on from there. I love to dive into how you got into writing from acting, and then you went to school, Boston University. You claimed the psych major, but how'd you get into the actual freelance writing? You were writing for magazines, being an editor.
I was definitely always a language person. I was always, you know, language arts, English was always my forte. Math was definitely not it. So I always knew that I was like a language person. I think I had good writing instincts. The problem was I always went to these really small private schools, and I actually don't think I ever got the best English education. I remember in high school, depending on the year, one teacher would like my writing and the next year they wouldn't like my writing. So I just had this vague idea that like, well, okay, I'm like decent at writing. Okay. Then I went to college, and I believe it was the second semester, I had this professor and his name was Dr. Green, and he was a total stickler for the mechanics of writing, the details. And then also learning how to really argue a point in a paper, which I had never really understood before. I didn't know what a thesis statement was, which is so insane. I'm like, how did I miss that? How was I never taught that? For whatever reason, I got to college and somehow got into Boston University. He really kicked my butt. And I've been meaning to reach out to him for like years and years. And I never have. And I totally should. But Dr. Green, if you're listening, he was great. And he was really the beginning of me identifying as a writer and really loving writing. College just like blew my mind. I really, like, as I said, I did not want to go to college. I wanted to stay in New York, and I wanted to act, and I wanted to date my new hot boyfriend. And that's what I wanted to do. And instead, you know, I was shipping off to Boston. And at the end of my first year, I was like, oh my gosh, I had this realization. Maybe acting is not my thing. While I was in college, I did a little bit of beauty blogging on the side. So blogs were still like really new. My kind of break here was that a friend of my husband's, she was in PR at the beauty company Clarins, and she's now one of my best friends, and she's just such a wonderful, generous person. She, for some reason, like had read my blog and liked my writing. And when I graduated from college and came to the city, we became closer. And eventually I was, you know, I had gotten married and I was in the city, and I basically was waiting for auditions and working in restaurants and, you know, taking acting classes, but the phone wasn't really ringing. I had gained a little bit of weight in college.
I saw your photos from college on Facebook. You look skinny as hell.
Thank you. I think I looked great. I'm one of the very few brides on this planet that actually gained weight before her wedding. I was living at home and I was babysitting, volunteering with high school kids and eating whatever they ate. I was a little bit bootylicious at my wedding. I was really excited when the dress zipped. I wasn't sure if it would. Looking back, especially now that I'm pregnant, I looked great. Camera does it, 10 pounds. The thing is, like, I was being in my young 20s, I went up against Blake Lively for every single thing that she did. Like, I auditioned for everything. And you're a type, when you're a tall, blonde, young, hottie type, that's what you're supposed to be. She was skinnier than me, boobier than me, tanner than me, blonder than me. And it just didn't quite click. And actually, I ended up later, I switched agencies. And one of my best friends, her uncle is an agent at one of the best agencies in New York. And he's brilliant. Stephen Hirsch at Gersh. It was just funny. It's like coincidence that it rhymes. But he was wonderful. And I remember when I quit, he told me, he's like, you know, Tara, I actually think you would have more success later in your life, like in your 30s. Because when I was auditioning, I, you know, 23, 24, I was getting good feedback for doctor roles and lawyer roles and kind of more serious grown-up roles. He was like, I could almost see you having like more success later in your 30s, almost like, you know, Katherine Heigl or something. And I was like, well, like, that's really sweet. I'm not really willing to like hostess until my 30s and then hope to get a break later. The phone wasn't really ringing. Things weren't really happening. And my friend Erin, she was the director of PR by this point at Clarins, and she had an intern who had quit early. So she was like, you know, I could really use some help. And I know you're interested in the beauty industry, and I know that you're a good writer. Like, would you want to come on and be my intern for a couple of days a week? And of course, if you have auditions, you can go do them. But maybe you just want to see like what you think of this industry. I'm indebted to her. She's like my best friend for life. She's been an amazing just sounding board and mentor over the years. Like, she's amazing. So I did that. And I did really enjoy being a part of the industry. And I liked being a working girl. I really didn't, because, you know, like when I was a kid and I was doing acting, if I booked something, fantastic. And if not, I'm a teenager, I'm a college student, and I have lots of other stuff going on. So it's no big deal. But doing it full time as a live, I mean, it's tough. And it's just a lot of waiting around. You feel like you have so much to give and you want to be working and you're like, oh, just get me on the set and give me that script and it'll be so awesome. But there's just a lot of in between and it's hard. I remember just feeling frustrated towards the end of my acting career. I had this great audition for this Robert De Niro movie to play his daughter. It was a great audition. I was really proud of the work that I did. You can say like, oh yeah, you know, the auditions are the work too. And they are. But the problem is when you go into another audition, you can't bring that with you and be like, oh, I just had this really amazing audition for this movie. Do you want to see it? It's completely irrelevant. It's gone. You have to give yourself those kudos and be like, that is success, but it doesn't get you anywhere. Whereas I started to realize that once I was in the writing industry, if you had a really great story that was a big success, you're considered for another big story.
That is so true.
It's like a straight line. Almost any other industry, you have a project that goes well or a presentation or something, and then you're considered for other opportunities. Where in acting, it doesn't actually mean anything. And actually, as I said before, even if you have this great success, it could actually hurt you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, why am I putting all of my eggs in this insane basket of just like, I really kind of fell out of love with it. So I was able to continue with the acting while I was still at Clarins. And then that internship came to an end, and my friend Erin, once again, angel as she is, just passed me off to her friend who is the beauty director at Refinery 29, which is an online magazine. It was still pretty small at the time. Now it is absolutely
it's
humongous
huge.
And literally like world domination. And, you know, the beauty department at the time was just this one girl. She really needed number two. She needed an intern. She was actually handling all of the beauty and health content by herself. And I think they were doing like five stories a day at that point, which is nothing compared to what they do now. So it was an amazing opportunity, and it was completely unpaid. At Clarins, it was paid. I wasn't paid. I didn't get credit. I was still, you know, working at the restaurant, but it was incredible experience because she was like, I need someone to write. So right away, like I wasn't fetching coffee. I wasn't making copies. I was writing. And I actually, even as an intern, I directed a photo shoot.
Wow.
I was so nervous that I almost puked down my organs. I had these opportunities. She was like, I need you to just take this stuff and run with it. And it was amazing. And it was cool. I also wrote about health topics. That was really cool coming from my psychology background. I really enjoyed that as well. So I interned there for about 7 months. And then I had the opportunity to come on full time.
How long were you with Refinery 29 for?
Total 2 years. In like dog years, you know, non-startup land, it's more like five. But in the 2 years, I wrote over 800 stories.
Holy crap.
And for 7 months of those 2 years, I was an intern that was in, I think, you know, 2 or 3 days a week. So I think that gives you, and I mean, on top of it, by the end, I was running all of our beauty video content. I was running all of our beauty social media content. I was editing. I was doing a gazillion other things other than just writing. It was fast paced, say the least.
Did you leave feeling, wow, that was family. I love that.
I was completely burned out and completely felt like my soul had been shattered. But I will say that I have appreciated it so much later. Now I could really say I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't trade it for anything because it was such an incredible opportunity. And I really, especially for me, you know, I did not have a journalism background. I had never done an internship. I had never written for anybody. So for me, it was full editorial digital content boot camp. I mean, I always say like everything I learned from Refinery 29. I learned everything. And what's amazing about that company is that every single person, whether they're like a 23-year-old assistant or they're an executive, they want everybody full hands on board with driving traffic. So you learn everything about just what makes good content, what makes a good headline, how to write good newsletter copy.
Are they teaching you themselves or are you doing the research for yourself, then bringing your
skills
into
them? No, they're teaching you. You're required to get training. The Refinery 29 Beauty Facebook page was the first specific Facebook page for a vertical that they created after just the Refinery 29 page. So you know, Megan, my editor, did not have the desire or the bandwidth to do this. She's like, all right, well, you're the person. You're running Refinery 29 Beauty. So they put me into meetings with marketing and basically taught me how to do it. And then I was in monthly meetings. We were going over what performed really well, what didn't. It's really interesting because you write a story and you come up with the headline. And then what they're doing, because I mean, they're just so crazy with like maximizing, like squeezing every last bit of traffic out of every single story. You're testing headlines on the homepage simultaneously to see what performs the best. You're also testing newsletters. So you write all the newsletter copy and then they do like A-B tests where they test two headlines to see which performs. Then you're also packaging it for social media. So you learn what makes someone click on something from a homepage, what makes someone click on something from a newsletter, what makes someone click on something from social media, what grabs people. It was very interesting. I mean, it was fascinating and I appreciated it so much as time has gone on. I can go into any conversation with any publication. I just did a big project with Neutrogena where they were creating content. And I was so surprised at myself. I was able to sit with this very experienced editor who had been in editorial, and now he was the director of brand copy at this digital agency. And I was really able to hold my own in terms of what is good content. How do you draw people into a brand? How do you package things? How do you attract the consumer that you're wanting to attract to your brand? And I was like, wow, I just learned so, so much. So for me, and you know, that's why I actually now would recommend to anyone. I mean, if you're young or you're trying to kind of break into an industry, take that job. That I did listen to that podcast episode with the copywriter.
Oh, Linda Formicelli. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys were talking about the content farms.
Yeah. Those content mills, basically.
Content mills. Yeah. And I mean, you could kind of say about refinery. I don't know. I mean, they're definitely, I feel like they're both. I mean, they do incredible journalism, but it's also definitely like at times it can feel, you know, quantity over quality. Yeah. For me, I mean, it was the most amazing thing ever. And I mean, listen, zero work-life balance. They own you 24/7. You are on email constantly. You have no life. You know, I stopped getting my period. I stopped sleeping. It completely, completely takes over your life. It took me a while to recover because eventually you're so burned out. You feel like you can't keep up. They're not giving you help or a hand to, you know, give you the resources that you need to succeed. They're just squeezing every single person for everything they got, every idea they have, every word they can write. So you feel kind of cheap. Was her name Linda?
Linda Formicelli.
Linda, yeah. You know, you do. You feel like you are not worth anything. So it's really hard. But then I came out of it. And once I did learn how valuable I was, and I was like, wow, I actually am really valuable. And I'm valuable because I learned there. So yeah. It was just kind of an interesting experience. So you definitely have to go into something like that with a really strong sense of self. You have to not lose yourself. And you have to be able to be like, okay, this is the situation. And I think, you know, many industries, many companies, you have to understand what is personal and what's not. I remember in the beginning when I was having a hard time keeping up, it was like this insane pace. I mean, they adjust their traffic goals all day long. Every week is totally different. Oh, this week we as a department have to put up 10 stories a day. Oh, the next week it's 15 stories a day. So your workload is constantly changing. And I remember feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm just not good enough. I just can't keep up. And I felt like, oh, it's me. Like I have to change. I have to figure it out. And then I went into a stage of like, oh no, it's them. Like if I could just get them to understand that I just need these certain resources and support to be able to succeed. And like, of course they'd want to give me the resources so I can succeed and I can continue my career here and I can grow. And then slowly I was like, no, Tara, that's not it. This is the kind of place where, you know, you go when you're young and you work your booty off and you get incredible amount of clips and an incredible amount of experience and you give it everything you have and then you get out. Because if you stay too long, it takes everything you have. I remember leaving and being like, I don't know who I am. I don't know which way is up. I have no more ideas. I literally have nothing else to say about beauty. Again, it's a good challenge for like a 24-year-old. It really is. It's so cheesy and I feel like such a mom saying it, but it's good to go out of your comfort zone. It's good to understand how hard you can work and what you're capable of.
Yeah, you could take a lot from that, but also knowing when is time to walk away too.
It's kind of hard to find a publication that treats beauty in the way that they do. It's innovative and it pushes the envelope and they really have an emphasis on diversity and it's just not like your typical beauty content. So it's kind of hard to figure out where I wanted to go. Then I really was like, okay, I think, you know, it's time. I think I need to step away from this. And I got great interviews. I was interviewing at Vogue.com. I was interviewing at Allure. I had all these great opportunities and I got close to a lot of things and I didn't get any offers. And that stuff is really hard because when you're already really burnt out at your job, that's another thing where I try to tell people, be really mindful. You have to put on your own oxygen mask first. It's business. And like, you have to look out for yourself. And if you let yourself get burnt out, that's kind of your fault. Like, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, none of us can just walk away from a job at any random time. We have bills to pay. But at the same time, you have to be very careful because if you get to the point of burnout, interviewing and applying for jobs and an editorial, you have to do an edit test for all of your interviews. And that's like 15 hours of work.
You have to watch out for yourself because no one else will for sure.
Absolutely. And then you go into these interviews and you feel like you're not presenting your best self. Because when I left, I pitched a website called Camille Styles. That was just a website that I loved for a long time. It's a really beautiful lifestyle, kind of like online magazine. It's like a lot of interior design and entertaining, also style and beauty. And this woman, Camille, she's a team of like maybe three or four women, but she has this amazing contributor network. It's all these great women who have these columns, you know, and different aspects of style and beauty. And I noticed that they didn't have a column that was beauty product focused. They had a beauty column column that was more DIY based. So I was like, well, you know a lot about beauty products. Maybe I could write stories for them that's just more product focused. So I pitched them and they very kindly got back to me and they were like, this is fantastic. We would love to have you. That was amazing. So I started doing that right away. I was doing 2 stories a month for them for my column. It's called The Decoder, like decoding beauty products.
Ooh.
And so I've been doing that for 2 years now, 3 years now. I don't know. The time really flies, but that was really key. If there's someone out there who is doing something that you really love, that you would love to be a part of, just pitch them, because working with Camille and her team was such a ray of sunshine in my life when I'm really doubting myself. Have I given everything that I have and then I have nothing left to give anymore? Do I even enjoy this anymore? And when I started doing these stories for them, you know, just when you're doing only 2 stories a month and they're on topics that you chose and you're doing it exactly the way you want to do it. And then these lovely girls based out of Austin, I have just so loved being a part of their world and community. And that's just been like a really happy little through line. Eventually, a friend of mine who actually, she was my beauty director for a while at Refinery when I was there. She was the beauty director at Lucky magazine, which was my favorite magazine when I was a kid. I literally collected them. I read them and reread them until I memorized them. Literally,
oh, wow.
I was obsessed with this magazine.
That.
It was my favorite thing. So by this point, Lucky, the print side had already shut down. It was just a website and it was a small team. It was like 15 people. So Annie had the opportunity, and Annie was like my friend Erin. She's been another kind of career fairy godmother to me. She was moving on to go to Self Magazine to be their beauty director. And she emailed me and was like, hey, you want to interview for my job? And I was like, yes, I do. Because at this point, I was totally ready to get back into editorial. I was totally ready to get back to writing. So I miraculously got this job and it was fantastic. This was about a year ago, August of last year. And it was so fun. For the first time, I was running my own vertical. So I was running all the beauty content, putting together the calendar, assigning stories. I had a lovely girl working right under me as the associate editors. Got to edit her content and then edit all the freelancers' content and be in the manager meetings with the other directors and the site director. And it was just so fun. And what was fun about Lucky at the time, this the digital, it was just beauty style fashion news. We weren't doing everything. It was still a fast-paced site. Everybody was working really hard, but it just felt we weren't trying to take over the world or like reinvent the wheel or do something insane. It was just like really good, smart content created by really smart, creative individuals. I was so happy to be there. It was just a great place to be. But unfortunately, I was only there for 2 months before they had to let me go because the company was starting to shut down.
Oh, wow.
Very sad.
Oh.
And so when that happened, that really sucked because I was so happy and I just loved this job. And I really fell into this depression. It only really lasted for like a week, but I definitely hit a point where I was like, everything I do just fails.
Oh.
I like take these risks and I do this good work for people. And then I just, nothing comes of it. This is awful. And I'm a failure. You know, sometimes like that, the devil or whatever it is gets in your head and it's just like, you're a failure. You're like a failing failure. And thankfully I shook that off and I was like, all right, you know, we're just going to make the best of what we have. And I started freelancing, and thankfully friends had heard, including Annie, who was now at Self, I lost my job. So they were like, hey, let's throw some freelance jobs your way while you figure out what you're doing. So I started working, and I was no longer depressed. I at first really not like freelancing. I was so happy to be on the team at Lucky, and I missed the camaraderie. I missed the brainstorming. I missed doing all of the editor things. Just writing a beauty story and passing it off, it felt like such a step back in my career. It didn't feel like I missed, you know, doing all those other things. I missed the editing. I missed the assigning. I missed just the collaborating. First, I was like, I don't think I like this. And so then I was starting to figure, you know, think about going back to school and becoming a therapist. But what's awesome is that I stuck it out. And, you know, over the holidays, it was totally dead and I was really anxious. But I went into the new year, and once the new year hit, it was people, their freelance budgets are finally revitalized and everybody needs help. And I think that it is an interesting time in editorial right now where people really want freelance. I think it's, you know, a little bit of a shaky economy right now. So I think people are worried about hiring full time, but people need help. So I miraculously since then have had all these great opportunities. And I actually, as of now, freelance writers are going to hate me, but I haven't had to pitch anyone yet.
That's amazing.
I've been literally getting all of my opportunities through referrals from friends, from from Refinery 29, all these like amazing, amazing individuals who had their butt kicked by Refinery in the best way, you know, like are all these like amazing people now who have this incredible experience and these amazing work ethics and are now running sites. They're all in these amazing positions. We've all stayed in touch and they all think of me and lucky as well.
Wow.
Even though I was there for a short time, the women there have been really generous. So I haven't really had to do a lot of pitching.
You're so positive about every experience and it just becomes all these universal skills, these assets, and then you create these connections and genuine friendships where you've been through the grind with each other and you have each other's backs.
When you've worked at a very difficult company in a very difficult job, that can like make or break you. So if you let it really bring you down, then that's one thing. But if you look at it, you're like, hey, I was in this really, really challenging position and I did really good work. You can still look at what you did and be like, man, I used to write 10 stories a day, put up 10 Facebook posts a day, and edit 5 videos, and do 3 rounds of market, and edit 3 other stories. I mean, I kept time logs because a few of my bosses were wanting to see kind of what I was doing all day. So I kept time logs. And I remember looking back at them and my days were broken up into 20-minute increments where I'd be doing a different task at each 20-minute increment because that's like all the only time I had for each task. So it was like write a story, 20 minutes, edit a story, 20 minutes, 20 minutes of marketing, 20 minutes of social media, 20 minutes more editing. It was incredible how efficient I was. That's amazing. You have to give yourself credit for rising to those occasions. And so now it can take that and go into the future. And now it's so funny. It's like when you're a freelancer, you're like, oh man, I have this deadline and it's so stressful. And then I like had to be like, Tara, you got one story to write today? Like how many stories did you used to write a day? I really believe that now. I really say to everyone, like pick a job out of school if you can that really pushes you out of your comfort zone, really takes you to the brink, really shows you what you're capable of. And then you can take all of those skills and you can do whatever you want with them. Like you have the whole box of crayons to then like pull on. And it really was. It was the best possible setup for a freelance career where now I have to talk to different publications, different brands, and wear all kinds of hats, whether it's marketing or branding or research, you know, whatever it is. It's like I have those things to draw on, but it's because I was challenged very early on. I've actually had a lot of friends recently who are at interesting crossroads in their careers right now. And I've been talking to them over the past few weeks. And suddenly I'm realizing like, well, wait a second. Am I this veteran or this wise? So like, no, but I have had a lot of very different experiences over the past few years. A lot of them were not, you know, necessarily either by choice or because I sought them out or whatever. But I have had a lot of change and a lot of ups and downs and been thrown into a lot of different positions. It's just so funny because, again, it's how you look at it. I've had a lot of friends lately who are in really tough jobs and they've been there for a few years and they're feeling burnt out and they're like, oh, but Tara, like I need my next job to be amazing. I need it to be perfect. It needs to make leaving this job worth it. And I think we're also afraid of that idea that you're going to have this job on your resume doesn't fit or was a failure or, you know, you left after 1 year or whatever. But we forget that like there's no one with a scorecard being like, oh, she just made the wrong move or, you know, like a video game of like, oh, not. Like wrong term, like, eh, you know, like it's actually not, there's no one doing that. Like you can literally do whatever you want. You can be confident in the decisions that you make because at the end of the day, the only person you're answering to is yourself.
I agree 110%. I'm like, wow, she is so talented and she transitions gracefully. I would totally want you on my team because I know that you could take on anything, research the hell out of it, and come out on top. So that's how I see it.
And that's what you need to be able to do as a freelancer. You need to be comfortable with switching hats very quickly, going from an experience with one editor that edits in one way and that you get along with in a certain way to working with another editor that has different standards and a different way of working. You have to be good at negotiating and renegotiating. You have to be really good at just jumping in, jumping out, and jumping in, jumping out. And I think that would be a hard thing to do. You know, if I'd been somewhere very corporate for 5 years and then you try to go freelance, it's like, whoa, this is crazy. But I think because I've had to be adaptable, jump in and out, I've been able to navigate all this stuff and really love it and really relish it. For me, I am the kind of person, I love a challenge. I love change. I love just a variety of different experiences. So, you know, at times, yeah, it's scary. You're like, oh gosh, I have to negotiate again. And oh man, is this client gonna, there's always that scary thing when you're handing in a piece for the first time to a new client. You're like, are they gonna hate what I do? Is this gonna be really bad? But it's a really good skill. So I do it. Like, once again, it's like, I can see that all this movement that I had up until this point did really prime me to then go into the freelance world where everything's changing every second.
We have a lot of storytellers who listen in and they're actually working on their own novels and writing. But what about those who are really interested in writing for magazines, copywriting? What would you suggest for them?
I do think networking. I mean, I just got an opportunity to work on a story with a contact that I literally met. I mean, this is one of those moments where, like, thank God for LinkedIn and Facebook keeping us connected, even if we don't keep up the connection. But
yeah,
I met with an editor when I was an intern at Refinery who was, and she was the executive editor at InStyle magazine at the time. And this was a friend of my husband's who hooked me up and I met with her. And she was awesome. But, you know, I don't think she was that impressed by me. She was like, well, you know, maybe you could, like, apply to be an editorial assistant. I don't know. I don't think she really knew what to tell me. Like, I was so green. I had no experience. So I think we, you know, maybe semi kept in touch, but I'd seen that she had gone freelance a little while ago. She recently reached out and was like, hey, you know, I'm working with this brand and we need bloggers. Would you want to write a story? I was like, absolutely, you know, and never in a million years, if you had gone back after I left that meeting with her, when I was, like, so humiliated and just feeling like, you know, such a novice, you tell me that then, you know, she's going to assign me something years later. That's amazing. So I would definitely say, and I'm actually not the best at this. I should take my own advice. Keep your LinkedIn updated. Keep your Facebook updated. Keep your connections as much as you can. I really do believe in that saying of work hard and be nice to people. Because a big part of it too is if people enjoy working with you, like if you're a pleasant person to work with, if you're really communicative, that's a big thing too with freelancing is because you're not in the office every day. If you can just really have that presence with people and just make sure that, you know, you got their email, and you're going to get back to them and you say, like, okay, I'll have this into you by this time and let's do it that way. Then you make good on your promise. I think that's a big part of it. In terms of creating opportunities for yourself, having your own site is always a great idea, even if it's just a really simple, I think we forget, I know I do sometimes, of like, you feel like you have to have this most, you know, this incredible website because now blogs are more gorgeous than Vogue.com.
Yeah.
It can be something simple. It can be a WordPress. It can be a Blogspot, just a place where you can put your words down and show what you're interested in, what you do. Make sure you kind of keep a running list of your clips, links to digital clips, anything that's been published, because people who are not familiar with your work will want to see it. So if you have that ready, that'll make it even easier.
So let's say if this somebody was curious about, oh, I want to write an article for something, a Huffington Post or Hello Giggles, would they just go through and comb through the site and find the editor for these sites and then reach out to them directly?
I think just going for it as much as you can, fine. I'd say definitely pitch them. I do think in this world, everybody needs content. It really is, I think, a great time to be a writer and a great time to be a freelancer. It's hard if you're wanting to be a magazine editor. It is a tough time for that right now, but people love to get content. You know, will you necessarily be paid exactly what you should be paid? Maybe not, because, like, everybody wants content and it's this whole kind of quantity over quality sometimes. But I just think pitch, I think people want warm bodies. They want fresh voices. So they'll usually be willing to work with you. But I also think going for smaller sites, just something that I did with Camille that I still think was awesome. But
yeah, I think that's amazing.
Well, yeah, I'm interviewing with, you know, I'd love to be like Into the Gloss, or I'd love to be at, you know, Vogue.com. And I've been like interviewing at some of these places and it hadn't been working out. Maybe there's just somewhere where I could be a little bit more of like a bigger fish in a smaller pond versus a small fish in a big pond, where I'm bringing some expertise to a site where they have a need for that. If you're into politics, fashion, or you're into fitness, kind of pitching a site that doesn't necessarily specialize in that, but that you think could have more of that content, that would be great. So I think just going for these more general lifestyle sites where they're trying to touch on all different kinds of topics, and then you can either be an expert in that, and maybe a series or a column, or just even like an essay, you know, like you have a great story to tell and you think that that story could be a great fit for a certain site. With a Camille Stiles, who is just incredible. I mean, she's so, so successful and I'm so proud of her. She's just grown her brand in like a really organic, slow, steady, but like very incredible way. They didn't have a ton of beauty content. They weren't like the experts in beauty. So, oh, like, you know, this writer from Refinery 29 who writes 5 stories a day, like, wants to come and write for us. Awesome, dude. You know, that's, I think, kind of the difference. So I think trying to think about what do you have that's unique and what could you bring? It's like, yeah, absolutely apply to Into the Gloss if you're a beauty writer. Absolutely. But at the same time, maybe you can write funny beauty content for like Hello Giggles. Maybe that's something that could be really cool. And then maybe there's some independent blogger that's in college or something or whatever. And you're like, you know what? I just really like your site. I really like what you're doing. Could I maybe collaborate with you for one post a month and just have that opportunity? Because again, it's like as a writer, you're a creative person. And part of it is spinning your wheels and staying fresh. If you had an amazing gig with a big brand or something, like that's awesome. But then like you maybe want to balance that with a really fun, kooky post about how a certain lipstick reminds you of your ex-boyfriend for Hello Giggles, you know,
and like,
that's really cool too. So whatever your niche is or your focus and figuring out how to push yourself out of your typical, like, well, I'm a beauty writer, so I want to write for Into the Gloss or I want to write for Glamour.com, you know, kind of thinking outside of that box a little bit could be good.
If you were a mentor and someone came to you as a mentee, what is that one message that you want to get through to them?
One thing that I think of that I think is a really good piece of advice in general in life that is also related to career is if someone shows you who they are, believe them. I believe that is from my mother via, I think it's Maya Angelou, actually. We all have to learn with work. You have to kind of let things be what they are. We can all exhaust ourselves trying to force a job to be a certain way or force ourselves to fit a career that doesn't fit. But seeing people, seeing jobs, seeing companies for what they are. I love Amy Poehler's thing too of good for you, not for me. And it's hard. I mean, when you are young and you are giving 110% and you are the yes girl and you're totally losing yourself in your job. Yeah, there's a time for that. I always believed, even when I was the one schlepping, you gotta schlep. Really believe in that. It was always very important to me. And I feel like important to everyone else. You have to pay your dues. Don't be cocky. You really got to slog for a while. But I think it's an important thing to learn of knowing who you are, knowing where you stand, knowing what your values are, knowing what your strengths are and your weaknesses, both very important. And if something's not working, being able to say, you know, it's not me. It's not really you. This is just not the right thing. And being able to move on and not carry it with you of bitterness or resentment or they should have done this or I should have done that. Kind of letting work be work a little bit. And that was another great thing about being a freelancer was I felt suddenly, I realized that I was free from the climbing of the masthead and the like, oh, she went from associate deputy editor to senior director. And, you know, you get very caught up in the hierarchy of everything and you get very caught up in what does my boss think about me today and how am I measuring up and how is my review going to go at the end of the year? It's so freeing as a freelancer to be like, you know, I'm working with this editor right now for the next couple months. I want them to like me and they definitely have to like my work. But at the end of the day, if they don't love me, if it's just not the right fit, I'm going to pitch some other people. And that's a really good feeling. So I think just letting things be what they are a little bit and just not trying to control it so much. And I think that that's valid in relationships, in friendships, romantic relationships. Letting things be what they are and having the discernment and being able to have the perspective of stepping back a couple steps. What's really going on here? Is this the right thing? Or do I maybe need to take a spin in the other direction or pivot, as they say in the business world?
That is really inspiring. And I think it would really, really help listeners to hear that directly from you, someone who's had so much experience. And now you and Neil need to figure out how to balance in a family. Have you guys talked about who's going to be working? Are you both still going to be working or are you going to work from home? And is Neil going to take off paternity leave? Like, how's that happening?
It's funny because when I first started my writing career, I was so inspired. My mom didn't work at all when I was growing up. She was a stay-at-home mom. So I was very inspired and I was really like, I'm a feminist and I'm going to further the cause and I'm totally going to do it all. I'm going to be a beauty director or executive and I'm going to have kids. And then I started my first job and felt really smacked in the face with the reality of the fact that this country does not support working parents at all. I was shocked. I was like, wait a second, this is impossible. This is crazy. And it really is. And I read this great book. It's called Overwhelmed. If you're interested in why this country is so terrible with the support of working parents, read that book. It's so well written and so well researched. And it was really great. I would love to be an example of a woman who is balancing it all, but I definitely feel like I would be sacrificing my sanity, my happiness, potentially my marriage, all of the above to try to do these things. I don't know if I want to fight the grain that much. And it's also being in New York City, you have to make a ton of money to justify working, or you have to love your career so much that you have to be totally fine with basically handing your paycheck over to childcare. So for me, I respect so much women who take the maternity leave and go right back to work. And a lot of women don't have the choice either.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for everybody. But I think for me, I'm a little younger. I'm 28, having my first child. So the kind of money that I would make at this point, going back to work to a full-time job, would barely cover the childcare. And I really want to raise my kids, especially when they're really little, paying that much money to have somebody else do that job. And I'm sure it's going to be hard and it's going to be boring and I'm going to miss the office and I'm going to miss work. And I'm a little overwhelmed because I want to continue with my freelance career. So I'm hoping to maybe get some like part-time childcare of some sort. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't really gotten there yet with the planning. I don't want to say like, oh, staying at home is just the dream and it'll just be perfect. And I know that that's not the case, but I can't really imagine it being any other way. So
women, while they're recovering, if you come back, you might sacrifice your position. All these other dudes are like, by the time you get back, boom, they already got your position that you would have gotten if you had stayed.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, you're supposed to have job security for the 12 weeks. It's probably the very few protections we have for parents that take a leave. But unfortunately, even if you technically have your job, I've heard of women getting passed over for promotions because they happen to be on maternity leave. And sometimes women are, they're just fired. I mean, it's very scary. It really, really is.
I'm definitely sure that you have done a lot of research on this, of course. So is there a country where they have really great system in place where women don't have to worry? Is it Switzerland or
Europe? They actually pay you to have children.
What?
I'm not kidding. They give you cash stipends for just any miscellaneous childcare that you need. You can take a year. I mean, depending on the country, it's like you can take 6 months, you can take a year. The company I'm working for right now is owned by LVMH, which is, you know, French based company. And our coworkers that work in France, not only do they have all of August off, but then you take a maternity leave here, or I don't know the exact, you know, leaves for each country, but a really good, if someone's interested in this, Cup of Joe, the blog, she has this amazing, amazing series that I think deserves major awards called Motherhood Around the World. And she interviews American mothers who are raising their kids outside of the
abroad.
U.S. And she has, I don't know how many entries there are. They're like 20, but I mean, it's like all Japan, Denmark, and New Zealand. I mean, it's incredible. And it's so, so cool to hear about the different maternity leave policies, but also just the traditions and the cultures, the attitudes towards raising children. It's very interesting.
Let's say you and Neil decided to up and move to France, Switzerland, Denmark, or even Japan. Mm-hmm. And you're placed in that situation where it sounds like there's a lot more incredible, fair opportunities for women who decide to have children, who have decided with their husbands, especially to have children. What would your ideal look like as a newborn mom?
You know, I think also just the American culture, because, you know, some of it is the law and some of it, you know, just things like having paid maternity leave for a year, having affordable childcare. You know, like in France, I love this book, Bringing Up Bébé. It's another great book resource for just understanding like a different culture handles working parent and raising children and all of that. Also just kind of the attitude. It's the American kind of capitalistic, individualistic society. Everybody's every man for themselves. Have to be as successful and make as much money as you possibly can. And it's also just not a very woman-friendly culture. Everything is really, you know, still, you have to read this Overwhelmed book because it's so interesting. It's just our entire society was centered around this idea of men should be working and women should be home.
Wow.
So our country was literally way back in the 70s, a congressman shot down a bill that would have allowed for universal childcare.
Oh, wow.
Like they have in Europe. And he shot it down. And the author of this book was like, why did you do that? And he was, well, you know, when I came home at 3 o'clock every day from school, my mom was there with a glass of milk and a slice of cake. And I think that every child should have that experience. So now that it's 21st century, how did that work out for you? Oh, guess what? It's like huge majority of women are working. Huge majority of women are bred winners. And he actually just succeeded. He didn't succeed in keeping women home. He just succeeded in making it impossible to be a working parent in this country, be sane, or be happy. The New York Times article making the rounds about the U.S. parent, working parent happiness gap, how working parents in the US are so much less happy and fulfilled than they are in other countries, because you feel like you are doing the impossible. You know, and again, I haven't done it, but it's just from what I read. You just feel so unsupported, and you feel like you can't do your best job at work and you can't do your best job with parenting.
Yeah,
you just feel totally.
It's like either or. You have to sacrifice
something. Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, I have to say that the company I'm working for right now, I'm working for an amazing beauty company in their copywriting department called Fresh. And they were an independent company. They're 25 years old, but they're now owned by LVMH. So, you know, they have all these great resources now with being part of this big conglomerate, but they're still run by their original founders, who are like these wonderful people who greet everyone with hugs. You know, like a lot of companies are like, oh, we're a family here. Like, they actually really
are
do that.
Yeah.
And they run the company. You can tell, like, people work very, very hard. It's a busy, busy place, and they're growing quickly. And you can tell there's a sense of work-life balance, and you can tell they respect working parents. And my boss there, it's been so nice to see her, because I mean, she's kind of superwoman. She used to be a ballerina. So I think she's very disciplined. And
oh,
like,
my gosh.
she really has her shit together, but she's able to leave right at 5:15 to go home and relieve nanny. Oh. She is able, you know, to pump multiple times a day. They have, you know, like, patient lounge. Everybody knows that, like, that's what she's going to be doing. And she works from home on Fridays, which is a brilliant negotiation move on her part. But just these little things. And she gets everything done. She's super on top of it. And yeah, sometimes, you know, she brings her work computer home. She has to catch up. But, you know, for the most part, you can tell it's like she doesn't have to apologize for being a working parent, which I think that happens a lot in this country. Unfortunately, if you constantly, you are doing something wrong, or you made a bad career choice by becoming a parent, which is so crazy, you know, where I feel like other countries kind of are going to have children. This is a good thing. We need to procreate. We need to create the next generation of workers and taxpayers. The economy kind of supports that. And for some reason in our country, there's like this hostility towards being a working parent. And, you know, the whole thing too, where I don't know if you've heard that men are actually rewarded at work when they become fathers. They're actually better regarded in the workplace once they become fathers, because people think, oh, that's so great. And
you
must be a good father.
It,
and that's
blah,
awesome.
Blah, blah.
You're able to manage it. That's so great. Yeah. And yeah, they think, they're like, oh, you must be so caring. Oh, that's so sweet. And then it's like, if a woman becomes a mother, then she's suddenly, oh, she's probably not as dedicated. Maybe she's a little incompetent. Oh, she seems kind of harried. And like, maybe she's, you know, as dedicated anymore, whatever the case may be. But yeah, it's a very interesting double standard.
You've had conversations with Neil about this. What's his stance on this?
What's interesting about the two of us is that, well, I'm definitely a feminist. We definitely do kind of fall naturally a little bit into those gender roles, which I think can be a good and bad thing. He is definitely a worker, and he's really very grateful and fortunate to be able to build these two businesses that he's super passionate about. So for him, work is his passion, and I think he really identifies with this whole, especially now that I'm pregnant, like I could see right away, it was like, must go kill the boar and feed the family. You know, like he really loves providing. And of course, it's like that takes a toll sometimes. It can be very stressful. It can be a lot of pressure. And actually, we had some conversations, I think, when we were early in our marriage, even before we got married, about he had actually told me that he did not want to be the sole breadwinner. Mm-hmm. His parents had gotten divorced when he was young, and his dad is a neurologist, and his mom was actually a lawyer. And his mom actually had to give up her career because his dad's career was just so insane. Being a resident, his mom says, like, either like I quit my job and I stayed home, or my kids were raised by somebody else and we would never see them. So I think that Neil kind of identified his parents' divorce with just these issues of who works and who stays home. And you know, it's not easy. There is no like perfect, easy solution. You know, he was always really having an idea. And then I had that idea too. Okay, well, you know, if you want me to work, I just want you to know that what you're going to be doing to help me out is you're going to take on half the childcare, half of the housekeeping tasks. We're going to be really partnerships in this. We'll both work and we'll split up everything else. And that sounds good. Well, time goes on
and
things shift. And it was just interesting for me because when we got married, I was 23 years old and I had not started a career yet. I had been an actress, but I had not been in like the New York working world. I mean, I had no idea what it would be like to be a working parent. So I think when I started to see that, once I started this freelance career, I was suddenly like, okay, this actually makes a lot of sense. And I think also Neil and I, you know, we went through some stuff with our marriage last summer, and I think we both kind of had a shift in perspective where we both were like, you know, happiness is what's important. And like, yeah, we have to provide for the family. We have to make money. We have to both be fulfilled and like pursuing the things that we want to do. But at the end of the day, what's going to make us happy and what's going to feel right? And for me, I just, when my kids are young, I want to be able to be home with them. At the same time, it's also really important to me to set that example of having a career and working towards things that you're passionate about. And I do worry about, for me, because my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I think I definitely have in my blood this super nurturing kind of mom thing. I do worry about losing myself and or like losing my relationship in my kids. So I do think that, you know, keeping my hand in the working world is going to be important for me. And it's all, I'm just so grateful that I happen to have found this career where I can be freelance. I can do part-time. Yeah. I mean, there isn't always that option. I have a friend who's an occupational therapist, and she doesn't have the option of just going freelance or going part-time, or, you know, I'm sure those things do kind of exist, but it can be very hard to get to that point. So I don't know. It's kind of fallen together in a pretty good way. And I actually am, I should say that, you know, I am considering, and I was considering before I got pregnant, actually going back to school. I was actually a psych major in college. So I'm thinking about going back to school eventually to become a social worker and or therapist.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of like a longer term goal that I see myself maybe doing when my kids are older.
That's an exciting goal. And where did that goal come to fruition?
So I was a psych major in college. My kind of backup plan was just always, I don't know, I thought I would be a decent psychologist. I just was really interested in people, and I was interested in, I think I was always kind of like the friend that people would kind of come to for advice, and it just sounded really interesting. So when my parents were really big on me like declaring a major and a minor from the get-go when I started school. So I was
like, parents.
Yeah, I was like, psychology, I guess. Like, I don't know. So, you know, I did that major, and I did really like it. I did find it interesting. Unfortunately, my program, I think undergrad, was very focused on the prevalence rates of certain disorders, and it was a lot of multiple choice tests, which I hate. So while it was interesting, I didn't necessarily feel, oh, this is perfect for me. What's funny is that I ended up switching from a French minor to an art history minor because I realized through doing, my school had this core curriculum where you get all your divisional requirements done and you are studying like the classics, classic works of literature, art, music. You do kind of the most important movements in social science and then kind of the most important areas of natural science. It was really cool. It was really awesome. And I learned through that I really enjoyed art history. I really liked writing about art, and psychology was just so, at least just the undergrad program, it was just all multiple choice. It was like, if you don't know the exact prevalence rate of this disorder, it's wrong. And I was like, well, give me a piece of paper and tell me to talk about Freud's theories on whatever, and I'll write it for you all day long. You know, there just wasn't that opportunity. So I was so happy with art history that I just felt like I could write. They were like, anything you have to tell me about this painting, give it to me. So I love that. And I really had some great professors really teach me how to write. So that kind of was an interesting kind of segue into writing. So I kind of gave up on the whole psychology thing. And then what happened with the psychology was I don't know like when I started like officially thinking about it, but around the time, so Neil and I kind of, you know, hit this tough moment with our marriage last summer. We had a great couples therapist that we use. And then I had a therapist as well for myself. Mm. And they're both these amazing women who were really just incredible at what they did. They also each ran their own practices. And I was just so interested in that. And I kind of identified with these women. Like I really kind of felt, I mean, they're amazing. So it's not like, oh, I could do what you do. But I did. I kind of was like, you know what? Like these women made a huge, huge difference in my life at a time where I really, really needed guidance and support. And, you know, for Neil as well. And the thought that I could do that for someone else, and it could be a really great thing. I did, I think, start to feel, actually, when I first went freelance, I started to have this feeling of being kind of want to sink my teeth into something a little bit more meaningful. And I'm also someone who just like, I thrive on challenges and change.
Yeah.
So it was just starting to kind of feel like I was ready for the next thing. So, you know, I was looking into school programs and then I got knocked up. So that's kind of on the back burner for now, which turned out well because I really got my stride with freelancing. And I was like, well, I really enjoy the beauty industry even now when I'm able to write for all these different publications and all these different brands at once. Like that's really exciting. And that's the kind of like variety and challenge that I kind of need. So for now, it's awesome and wonderful, but it is something that I'm considering for the future. So that I think it's good. Amazing. It's good to have like short-term goals and like long-term goals, and we don't have to like accomplish everything this second.
It's funny. So I was talking to my little sister who's studying at Yale right now, and she has so much on her plate and she does so many different things. There's that question that most of us ask ourselves when we're in college, like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? And then I think when you're at that age, you think, holy shit, I need to know what I'm doing right now or I'm screwed. I don't want to be 30 and then figure it out. And then by the time we are nearly 30, we're like, dude, what the fuck were we stressing out about? Everything is meant to be. And then when I saw that Oprah had this video about a grand master plan, she says, no matter what it is, whatever you're doing right now, basically chill out. It's meant to be. Whatever you're doing right now, it will eventually lead to your larger master plan. I can definitely resonate with that. And we were talking about in the very beginning, you have a very different career path. You've gone through so many different things. It's not that one conventional path. I'm in the similar place. My sister is going about to go through the same thing. She's multi-talented as well and has so many things she's amazing at. Both of my sisters, I just try to remind them, listen, you, whatever you're doing right now, just give it 110%. That's all that you need to do. You don't need to figure out if it's the right thing to do. You just need to know that your heart and your gut loves doing it. And if you have any kind of inkling or interest in it, then go for it 110%. And I'm talking about school extracurricular activities too in college. Like you just never know. And no matter what, you're going to learn life skills. You're going to learn how to delegate and talk to people that will eventually, it'll be a huge asset for you as whatever it is that you're going to become later on, even if it's 15 years down the road.
I'm starting to see all of these skills that I picked up at these different jobs, even some jobs that like almost broke me. They were so difficult or so bad or so whatever. Or, you know, jobs that I thought like, oh, maybe this is kind of a cop out, or maybe this is like a real step off of my path. Gosh, like, I don't know if people are going to think that I just gave up or And then it's like, I'm doing these jobs now and I jump in with different clients or different publications and I'm, wait a second, like I got these skills from that job and I wouldn't have these if I wasn't, you know, working for that insane media startup anywhere you are. And that's I'm trying to tell my friends, it's like they have this idea of like, okay, my next move has to be the perfect next move. Yeah. It has to be the perfect next job. So important. If I could like give, you know, anyone advice coming out of college, it's like there is no perfect job. It's like a person. It's like relationships. It's like any job is going to have good qualities and bad qualities. Mm-hmm. And so you really do just have to soak up the good things and really kind of enjoy that. But also it's important to also learn like what you don't want to do or the kind of company that you don't want to work for. That it really is all valuable. So if you feel like, oh, I'm just schlepping at this job and it's the worst and no one respects me and it's terrible, it's like, well, you know, think about all of the skills that you're learning and then you're going to bring that forward with you and eventually people will respect you. You won't be the yes girl forever.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that 110%. It's so funny they compare it to relationships because that's so true. Absolutely true. I know you mentioned Overwhelm. It was a really good book and I'd love to check that out. There's any other book or books that is your ultimate favorite that's made a huge impact on you that you'd like for us to check out?
I do. I have a couple. So first of all, The Princess Bride, if you or anyone else has never read The Princess Bride, you have to read it. So I got it for Christmas when I think I was 12 or 13, and I read it, I think in a day, I just like knocked it out. It's incredible. It's this amazing, funny, kooky story, and it's incredibly written, and the stories of like each character, he tells their entire life story. There's so much there. And when I saw the movie years later, I was flat out disappointed.
Oh,
like,
really?
You know, people love The Princess Bride. It's like everyone's favorite movie of all time. Like the movie does not hold a candle to the book. It's like not even close. So you definitely have to read that book. It's amazing. And actually, recently we were like going through a hard time and he was reading it to me at bedtime and it was just the best ever. So that's just like one of the most special books to me and just kind of always will be. Mm-hmm. Another book that really had an impact on me a little bit later when I was 17, The Time Traveler's Wife by Audrey Niffenegger.
Oh my God. Yes, girl. I cried so much.
Know, you think it's like a chick lit book and like it is not. I mean, I've been meaning to reread it because I think now a little later in life as a writer being married for 5 years, I think I'll have even more appreciation for it. But it's like a beautifully written, it's like a symphony. The way that she composed the story because it goes in between from the two characters, Claire and Henry. It alternates their two perspectives, yeah. And it also alternates periods of time. So, you know, you go from like Claire's childhood to Henry in his 20s to like Claire in her 20s and back and forth. And it's honestly even kind of hard to keep up with. Like your brain is kind of in knots and you kind of feel like you're not smart enough to keep up with it. It's an incredibly beautiful Harper. I mean, it like really blew my mind. Not just the story was so good, but the way that it was written was so incredible. And I'm currently reading, I love this author, Emma Strobe. She is awesome. She lives like a neighborhood over from me. We've actually emailed a little bit. She had a book out last year called The Vacationers that was so fantastic. Again, it's like one of those books where you're like, oh, this is like a fluffy chick lit like book read it or beach read. And it wasn't at all. I mean, she like is one of those people that captures the like human spirit in a really, really insightful, amazing way. So that her book was The Vacationers, that was last year. And then her new book, Modern Lovers, just came out and I'm reading that right now. And it's just like a total delight. It like takes place where I live, like out here in Brooklyn, which makes it even better. But it's an amazing story about two families and their two young teenage kids. And I don't know how it ends. So I'm about halfway through, but it's been awesome. So she's a smarty pants. She's great.
And that wraps up our episode with the beautiful Tara Thompson Rasmus. It's tough enough navigating our way through careers, burnouts, recovery, and balancing relationships, and to get through it all with our head held high. Tara, thank you so much again for coming on the show and really bearing it all so that we can all learn and take away from your experiences. I absolutely loved chatting with you. And listeners, thank you for joining us today. Please send your love to Tara over on Twitter at TTRasmus. For the books and resources mentioned in this episode, be sure to head over to her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Tara Thompson Rasmus. I've been loving your messages and emails about the podcast and have been listening to what you're looking for. A lot of you have reached out asking about writing communities and classes, and I'm so excited to tell you more about Gotham Writers. If you're working on your own children's book, anything from a picture book to young adult novel or any kind of writing, I really want you to listen to why Gotham is an incredible asset to writers. They started in my favorite city of all time, New York City, my home where a lot of my dreams came true. Just like me, Gotham also believes that everyone has a story to tell and they exist just so they can help writers like you tell your story better. You learn from teachers who are accomplished writers and are amazing at teaching. Through lectures, writing exercises, and workshopping, you learn how to enter the psyche of young people with a grown-up sense of craftsmanship. Gotham teaches writers all the elements of craft in a way that best resonates with young readers, and better yet, you'll learn how to entertain and enlighten young minds. On top of making progress on your work, Gotham will also introduce you to the ways of the business. They've put a lot of heart and soul into creating a safe and structured environment for writers to learn for over 20 years. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/Gotham Writers to check out their classes that also include blog writing classes. They have a super supportive staff that will help you find the course that's perfect for you. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.